bet we've been together for a million years.
And I bet we'll be together for a million more.
Oh, it's like I started breathing on the night we kissed. And I can't remember what I ever did before. What would we do, baby, without us? What would we do, baby, without us? And there ain't no nothing we can't love each other through.
What would we do, baby, without us?
Talking with Michael Gross, who, of course, was part of one of my favorite shows of all time, the Family Ties Show. How are you?
Well, I'm very good. It's wonderful to be in Boston. I'm having a great time. Are you located here?
I am, as a matter of fact, and I was at Macbeth already.
So oh, well,
I saw the play. It was great.
Well, I hope you enjoyed it. I have to say, that I have this one little proviso, which is for 15 or 20 years now, I have not read reviews. So it's the only thing I'd like not to discuss with you, because all I'm given to understand, because it's impossible not to get whiff of things, is they're somewhat mixed, the reaction here in Boston. And I have found that if I, of course, read reviews, and they despise me, naturally, I'm affected by it, and, you know, not happy and all that sort of thing. And if I read the reviews and they absolutely crow about me and they've said I walk on water, well, then I'm worried that every night I'm not going to be able to come up to those same standards. So it seems that whether they're good or bad, I'm never quite happy, and they always, in some way, however much I say they don't, affect my performance. I'll make little, you know, changes here or there, or I'm at least aware of what people have said. And so the only way I found for me to go out on stage every night is in a stage of blissful, self-imposed ignorance of what other people have said.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that PMP Network's review was very positive.
Oh, good.
And that was from the press night. You're right about one thing. It doesn't really make any difference what people think, unless all of a sudden everybody reads it and says, "Well, this is no good," and it closes.
Well, that's the biggest. You know. That's the biggest problem, exactly. What's that effect it can have on sales? Because people are. I understand how people feel, because at $65 or $68 a ticket, this is an expensive proposition. Maybe not as expensive as taking your family to Disney World, but it's still expensive. And so people want to be, you know, they want bang for their buck, so to speak. What I do see every night, and I've not seen this for a while, is audiences on their feet cheering every night. It's extraordinary.
Yeah.
So people seem to be loving it, and I think what's probably most gratifying for me is to see young people out there who have come to see their friend Frasier, or get whiff of the fact that Michael J. Fox's father's in the production, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their first Shakespeare, and they come and they're surprised that they not only understand it, but dig it. You know, they're enjoying themselves. They have no trouble following it, and they thought they were going to be hopelessly lost.
I think you hit the key, though. I mean, certainly the fact that that Kelsey Grammer and yourself are starting this as long, and also the female lead, too.
Oh, right, Diane Venora.
Right. All of you are well-known for other things. And I think that brings in a whole new crowd to Shakespeare. I mean, I am not one that would run to a Shakespeare play to review it. But I went because I'm fans of the folks who are starring in it. So I think that that did bring a new group of people in. But I enjoyed it as well. And I never thought I would sit and enjoy Shakespeare. So that's
a testament. Well, I think, among other things, it's a well-spoken performance. We know what we're saying. We get that across. People can follow it. And I think, I mean, for starters, a lot of people feel they just won't understand it. You know, it's... 400-year-old English, and they're not gonna get it. And it is poetry, but I think poetry is easier understood spoken than read, frankly, by someone who's speaking it well. Poetry is made to be spoken, not read in silence. And so I myself have a problem with just sitting down and reading poetry. I think, oh God, this is going to be over my head. It's going to be like panning for gold. I won't be able to find the nuggets. I'm going to come up with gravel. I won't dig it. I won't understand it. I'm going to feel stupid. And that was my earliest reactions to Shakespeare when I was a kid as well. And then I discovered he was not only understandable, but had quite a lot to say to me.
Have you done a lot of Shakespeare on stage?
Not as much lately, but I used to do a lot more of it prior to the years on Family Ties, and I'm increasingly hot to do more. Frankly, I'm going through a transition in my career right now where I'm increasingly interested in returning to my roots, which are the stage. It's about primarily because I'm driven by good material. I've always thought that the best way for me to go was to follow the good material trail wherever it led me. I was not particularly interested in doing television, but that's probably because, well, Family Ties was so well written that I thought, okay, I'll do television. And that's probably the reason you haven't seen me do a lot of other television since, because it was a hard act to follow.
Let me just go back a little bit to the Family Ties show, because I'm a huge fan of that show. That came out in 1982. It was it was really during the Reagan administration, where conservative values were floated around, and it really parodied them in a lot of ways. You played Steve Keaton, and of course Meredith Baxter Bruni was Elise, and Michael J. Fox took off as son Alex, who was the conservative in the family of liberals, and then you had the two other children in the family as well. And the show really, I assume it went higher than you ever thought it would be.
Well, it was amazing. I mean, I was in New York at the time doing theater, and was hired out of New York on the basis of a videotape I had made. An audition, and I assumed I'd be out there, you know, make a pilot, and it would crash, and nobody would accept it, and then I'd be back doing my theater, and the pilot money would sort of subsidize my theater career. 7 years later, there we were.
That's amazing.
Doing a top-rated show, and one that I think we can all. Of which we can all feel justifiably proud.
It still runs now in syndication.
And it will start on Nick at Night this fall.
Right.
So it is still a favorite, and it should be. And I have no problems with that. You know, I'll probably write when it ended. I just didn't want to talk about Family Ties. You know, I'd done it for 7 years. I was sick and tired of it. I was... in many ways, probably, I think I took it for granted because I was essentially a theater person and did not watch a lot of television. I assumed that most shows were that well written, most casts got along that well, and it would be, you know, easy to find another show that well written.
Not true.
No, not true. It had a lot to say. And I must say, you know, one of the nice things about, you know, you talk about Alex... P. Keaton, his conservative values. One of the great things about that character and why he works so well is that his head always said one thing. That was to say, make money, be conservative, you know, be a bit of a cutthroat. And his heart said another.
Mm.
And that was one of the greatest things they did with that character, and why it was remained one of the best written characters, is that he was a character who was always in conflict with himself. He was the protege of Bill Buckley, supply side economics, that sort of thing, but he was also the son of those parents.
Right.
And when push came to shove, he would always go with his heart rather than his head. And that's what made that character so enormously appealing.
How did Michael J. Fox handle the incredible accolades that came his way from that show?
Very well indeed. You know, he was always a perfect gentleman. There was always quite a lot of, I guess, egalitarianism on the show. I mean, there was never any pulling of rank or anything like that. He was never treated any differently by the producers. And, you know, Meredith had been a longtime theater professional, TV professional, who had seen, you know, accolades come and go and mm-hmm. be a flavor of the week and not again and all that sort of thing. So she was, I mean, it was all handled very well. And there were absolutely no problems. I mean, were there jealousies at times? I suppose. I mean, I think only in that everybody was, Michael being thoroughly wonderful man that he is, we were all happy for him. I think if Meredith and I had any qualms, it was, well, gee, can't we spread this out a little more? You know, can't we spread? Nobody was begrudging Michael his success. Meredith was the first person hired for that show, and basically the understanding was the show was going to be centered around her and her family, and the focus all changed. But nobody ever begrudged Michael his success. I think it was more a case of people saying, gee, shouldn't there be a little for the rest of us as
yeah.
well?
I think the same thing happened in Happy Days, where, you know, it was going to be a vehicle for Ron Howard and the gang, and then Henry Winkler came along, and a minor character became the major character.
Well, it could well be said that Alex P. Keaton was the Fonzie of the 80s.
I think he was.
In that respect.
Well, now, do you ever talk to Justine or Tina Yothers at all?
Well, that's funny you should mention that, because I just saw Tina about 3 weeks ago, and it was just amazing. She belongs to a rock band she's founded called Jaded. She and her brother Corey, who I knew all those years ago, and several other musicians, and they actually played at a Nick at Night kickoff several weeks ago in New York, earlier in May. And I had not set eyes on Tina in 11 years. And, you know, for whatever reason. I stood next to her for 30 seconds, and she said hello to me and looked me in the eye and shook my hands, and I didn't know who she was. I thought I was talking. She was the fact that she happened to be standing next to Meredith, it didn't click. She was no longer a blonde. She had this jet black punk hair. She had breasts. She was no longer 16, but 27. And I didn't know who she was. She looked at me, she said, "You don't know who I am?" And I'm going, "No, excuse me." And I went, "Holy crap, it's Tina." And Meredith and I sat there and watched Tina, poised, talented, absolutely marvelous. And we sat there, and I turned to Meredith and I said, "Isn't it bizarre?" I feel exactly like a proud parent watching her blossom these 11 years later in this band. I said, "I'm just absolutely thrilled." So Tina and I are recently back in touch. I have her phone number and her email address and all that sort of thing, and I've written her since that little meeting.
What about Justine?
Justine is, for whatever reason, sort of off the radar, and I don't know why. But she hadn't nobody's sort of been in touch with her lately.
When you guys were on the air, right afterwards, we had her on the network. She was not the nicest person in the world, I got to tell you.
I
wasn't happy with her.
Yeah, right. Sorry to hear that.
You know, that's fine. You know, not everybody's the sweetest person in the world, but I don't know if she was like that during the show, but she wasn't very pleasant when she was over here.
Well, let me say that we all got along very well on the show, and I think Justine's a very complicated young lady and very talented, And I've heard tales over the past couple of years of her unhappiness, and for whatever reason, I wish it were not so.
It's kind of sad. She's a very adorable young lady.
I liked her enormously, and would love to be in touch with her again. For whatever reason, and I've done this in the past too. She seems to be cutting off a lot of those old associations, isolating, for lack of a better word.
So she won't be part of the Nickelodeon push.
She was not. No, she was not there. Yeah. She was the. Michael could not be there, but appeared on video, and Meredith and I and Tina were there, and she was a no-show and basically made it clear that she didn't want to have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's happening because I'm not in touch with her.
Yeah.
I just, I would wish it were otherwise.
Let's talk a little bit about Michael J. I got to tell you, I had a little bit of a tear in my eye watching Spin City and watching you come back as his dad.
Yeah. Did you ever hear the word penis so much in all your life? That's pretty good for a kid who was raised by the Sisters of Providence. I mean, as a young Catholic boy, I wasn't supposed to know what a penis was until I was too old to put it to use. But television has certainly changed a lot since the innocent days of Family Ties.
How is Michael doing?
Michael's doing very well indeed. You know, he's thoroughly committed to his new role as spokesperson for Parkinson's research, and will fully intends to make appearances on Spin City in the future, and has his own production company, and among other things, I think is creating an animated series, and is working on a series for his wife, Tracy Pollan, actress Tracy, who we met at Family Ties.
Mm-hmm.
And he's still got a lot on his plate. He's enormously positive, living in the moment, and I think it's admirable. I mean, given the choices, he's behaving with a great deal of nobility. You know, I mean, myself included, I might be inclined towards self-pity.
Mm.
I see very little of that.
He's a pretty good guy anyway, though. He's a very grounded individual. I know we've played hockey together in Boston.
Oh, no kidding.
And, you know, he's just a pretty down-to-earth kind of guy.
Well, and I think this, the last 10 years have brought him to a new maturity that, frankly, might not have been possible without this crisis.
Mm.
He has a new sense of the spiritual in his life, the fact that he is not in control of his destiny, that control is in fact an elusive thing, and perhaps an illusion. And that's an important thing for all of us to learn, and which most men really don't come to understand until their first heart attack and triple bypass surgery, or until they lose their wife and their kids and their house through some misadventure, or their divorce, or their retirement or something, you know. But Michael has come to a sort of knowledge that most men don't acquire until later, but at a very great cost. That is to say, the crisis of his crisis of health. But perhaps, I don't know, perhaps great knowledge is not possible without some great cost, you know.
That's possible. You know, talking about great knowledge, when you came on, the first thing that came into my mind was, I bet we've been together for a million years.
You remember that.
And what's the next line?
Let me think a minute. I bet we've been together for a million years. And I'll bet We'll Be Together for a Million More.
There you go. See that? You still got it.
Yeah. Yep.
Michael Gross, of course, starring in Macbeth right now at the Colonial Theater in Boston. It's a don't-miss type of situation, folks. Even if you're not into Shakespeare, you will really enjoy this play. So get out and check it out. And I am thrilled to have been able to talk to you. I was always a big fan of Family Ties, and now I'm a Shakespeare fan, too.
Oh, well, great. It's been a pleasure, and I must say, Boston audiences have been so kind to us. Their enthusiasm has been extraordinary. And big houses, I'm still there. I'm sure there are still a few tickets. We'll only be here until Sunday, June 4th, and I encourage people to come out and see
it. Yeah, there are not many tickets left, folks, so give them a call right now at the Colonial Theater and get your tickets. Thanks so much for coming on, Michael.
Oh, the pleasure was mine.
Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Good day.